Welcome to another episode of That Optimism Man podcast. This is the place where we explore the why and how of infectious optimism and optimistic leadership, the powerful forces that shape better lives, leadership, and communities. I'm Victor Perton, That Optimism Man, and I'm passionate about spreading optimism. Why? Because optimism is the key to leadership, innovation, and resilience. Today, I have the joy of welcoming Leon Logothetis, affectionately known as the Kindness Guy. You may know him from his kindness diaries in which he journeyed across the world relying only on the generosity of strangers. His work is a powerful testament to the idea that kindness and optimism are not just linked, but essential forces for transformation and human connection. In his new film, The Kindness Within, A Journey to Freedom, Leon takes us even deeper into the heart of finding freedom through kindness and optimism. From crossing continents in a yellow beetle to spiritual discovery in India, Leon has lived a life dedicated to proving that kindness is a force for good in the world. What fuels his optimism? What lessons can we take from his extraordinary journey? And how can we bring more kindness and optimism into our lives? Join me as we welcome a true beacon of optimism, Leon Logothetis. Leon, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on That Optimism Man.
Thank you so much for having me.
As you know, I have been a great fan of yours, and everyone who visits the Center for Optimism, the first question we ask them is, what makes you optimistic? Is it your life experience, your mindset, the people around you, your experiences?
It's a great question. I think I was born with optimism, to be honest. That doesn't mean that there aren't moments where my optimism wanes. There are. But generally, I consider myself to be pretty optimistic. I think it's a good trait to have. I once read a quote by the Dalai Lama. He said, "Be an optimist, it feels better."
He is a huge fan. I had the honor of being in an audience with him during COVID, and he did it online, and he talked about teenagers. He said there's nothing more important than fostering optimism in teenagers, but you can't tell them to be optimistic. You have to model it. And, you know, as I followed your journey, I think you are a great model of optimism and persistence and, you know, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, you know, that notion of optimism, even in the most difficult of circumstances.
Yes, indeed. I think persistence, I definitely have. And optimism, I think more people should let it flow through them.
So I became a fan of yours watching The Kindness Diaries and watching it with my children who were then young teenagers, and they loved it. I mean, the first couple of episodes, they're thinking, who is this man and what is he doing? And then we became avid followers. And in the series, you traveled around the world relying only on the kindness of strangers for food, for shelter, and fuel. So thinking back several years now, what remains the most profound thing you took away from that experience of The Kindness Diaries?
I think ultimately the most profound thing is that we are basically the same. What do I mean by that? I mean at the base of our essence as human beings, irrespective of color, irrespective of religion, irrespective of how much money we may have or may not have, at our essence we are the same. We want to be seen, we want to be heard, and we want to be loved. And it took me traveling around the world relying on kindness to truly understand that really important piece.
And driving around in that yellow beetle, and I remember you driving, and then you got down to Mexico, and kind people said, I don't think you should go any further down, put it on the boat, and you took it around on the boat. Just the notion of a little bit of colour, you know, that yellow, that colourful personality of yours. Did you see that evoking reactions in people, that sort of slightly quirky, you know, here's an interesting guy and he's quirky and he's kind and he's funny and he's nice?
I mean, look, if I wasn't funny, thank you for calling me funny, but if I wasn't, I think I'm quite hilarious, but if I wasn't funny, if I wasn't kind, if I wasn't quirky, then it would be harder, right? You know, you have to meet people with joy. And if you meet people with joy, then they will more often than not reciprocate.
Serendipity this week, the Australian Attorney General's Department gave me charge of their 40 graduates this year. And one of the things I said to them in writing policy, you have to have joy. You have to have some laughter. You have to have some optimism. And I'm now 66. But one of my most profound learning experiences was a couple of years ago when some people from Finland wrote to me. And they run an operation called the Art and Science of Joy. And ever since then, I've focused on those moments of joy. I stop and smell my roses as I go out in the garden. I plant lots of daffodils. I ask people what's been the best thing in your day. So maybe a little bit more about, that joy that was so evident in the Kindness Diaries and how that connects up to your kindness and your optimism.
So look, I will also say that I am filled with joy, but there are times when I'm not. So, the version of me that you saw in the Kindness Diaries was the best version of me, right? The version of me that was, filled with love, filled with adventure, filled with joy, filled with curiosity. And if I could live like that at all times, I mean, my life would be magnificent. I guess I could live like that, right? Why not? But I don't always live like that by any stretch of the imagination. I wish I could. It's not a Pollyannish thing that everything was going to work itself out. It doesn't. It doesn't work that way. And sometimes, I get interviewed and people are always like, oh, you're so kind. You're so joyful. You're so adventurous. And I could just be like, yeah, you're right. I am. Or I could tell the truth and say, well, that's just one version of me, and that's the best version of me. And the not-so-best version of me would need a little bit more joy in his life.
Yeah, and you open your new movie with that, and I'll come back to that. I mean, that we all have a dark side. And although I was lucky enough the other day to meet the Princess of Bhutan, who heads the World Happiness Institute, and I'd said to her... Look, my mum was always a skeptic of that American Bill of Rights, notion of happiness, ha ha. She was much more in favor of contentment. And the princess just smiled at me. She said, you get it. We Bhutanese, when we talk about happiness, it's more about contentment. It's more about, living the life we live, wanting to do better and to experience more joy and to experience more laughter. It's that notion of contentment. Now, I know I see you always moving forward, but I do sense a sense of contentment as well.
A lot more than there was, right? So, it took a long time to get to this place, let's say. It took a lot of adventures, a lot of good things happening, a lot of bad things happening. But I like the use of the word persistence that you did at the beginning. Perseverance. As you can tell, I grew up in England, and when I was a teenager, 80s and 90s, we were really indoctrinated in what Winston Churchill did in the Second World War, right? Never, never give up. When you find yourself walking through hell, keep walking. And I don't know why, but for some reason, I took it to heart, and I just will never stop. And if I choose to stop, I'll stop for a bit and then get back up and keep going. So I think perseverance is a really big one.
And what, a few years ago during lockdown, we were still running our Nelson Mandela Youth Leadership Summit, and you generously joined us for that. And you shared this inspiring video. And at the time you told the young people, you were reading Long Walk to Freedom, and you spoke about your optimism generated by the young and the young at heart. And again, I don't want to elevate you too high, but if you remember Mandela, when he was asked, are you an optimist? He said this, I'm fundamentally an optimist. Whether that comes from nature or nurture, I cannot say. Part of being optimistic is keeping one's head pointed to the sun, one's feet moving forward. There were many dark moments when my faith in humanity was sorely tested, but I would not and could not give myself up to despair. So how is that perspective? It's almost in some senses mirrored by you know, that continuous the journey forward, the face to the sun, and then that notion where he says, many dark moments when my faith was tested. What do you reckon?
So look, as you know better than I do, Mandela spent 27 years in prison. And Mandela was treated in disgraceful ways. Yet Mandela used those 27 years to become the Mandela that you and I know. And my point is that when bad things happen, we can choose to let the bad things take us down, or we can choose to let the bad things turn us into who we were always meant to be. And it's easy for me to sit here in my house in Los Angeles and say that. Not so easy to say it when you've spent 27 years in prison. But although I've never been incarcerated, I have spent many years in my own mental prison. I actually give speeches at maximum security prisons. And I start off my speech by saying basically exactly what I just said. I tell them, I have never been incarcerated. And I understand if you don't want to listen to anything I have to say. But before you make that judgment, know that I've spent most of my life imprisoned in my mind. And they all start nodding their heads. And at that moment, I'm like, okay, I've got them. And I can say whatever I want, right? Because it's ultimately the truth. Most of us, if not all of us, know what it feels like to be incarcerated in our mind. And few of us get free from that. Mandela was one of them. He got free. And I'm on my way to becoming free. And it took a long, long while and a lot of pain. And that's why sometimes it's interesting because whenever I'm interviewed, prior to this movie, but whenever I've been interviewed, they all concentrate on the positive. Oh, you're so happy, you're so kind, you're so this, you're so that. And yes, that is one part of who I am, but it's not all of who I am. And it's a process to free oneself. And with people like Mandela, they are teachers. They teach us how to free ourselves. Because if he can do it, then why can't you?
Yeah, I visited Robben Island and, had the honor of being with some of his fellow prisoners. And luckily, as well, when he became president, I was asked to go to South Africa to help with some new legal thinking. Though for me, I mean, we're recording this just after International Women's Day. For me, my grandmother was a huge influence. She was sentenced to the Gulag for over a decade. And yet survived and continued to remain optimistic and was there. She said to me, I'm going to outlive communism. And after the August coup, 1991, she did. And again, my mother, a refugee twice, widowed twice. Again, it's in those dark moments, as you say, I think my mother once took me to the Vivekananda Ashram in India. And her hut had outside it, from the hottest fire comes the strongest steel. And so I think you are, I'm not as you say, one shouldn't laud people too much, but I think you are evidence of that. Can I just maybe again turn back to kindness? So at the Centre for Optimism, our fundamental research is asking individuals, what makes you optimistic? And we've probably got 20 or 30 people who spontaneously connected their kindness and their optimism. And one example, a lady, Nicola Heppenstall, who now serves with me on the board of VicWater, said this: What makes me optimistic? I know that I can change people's lives by doing small acts of kindness. It's often the little things that matter the most, and I can do that each and every day. So, in your experience, are the kind people more optimistic, or are optimistic people kinder? And What is it about kindness that makes it such a powerful force for change?
I think that when you're kind, or when you are in the emotion of kindness, your heart is open. And when your heart is open, anything is possible. You cannot be a pessimist with an open heart, right? So I think that optimism and kindness, in many ways, are very similar.
Yeah, and I think they're just such powerful forces for advancement. You know, just coming back to your Indian journey, there's a Brahma Kumari leader who died a couple of years ago at the age of 103. And she was still working to the age of 102. And she, I haven't got the quote in front of me, but she said, "Most people have trouble smiling. So that if you can smile at someone else with a genuine smile, you lift yourself, you lift the other person, you lift the world." And I'm sure you have found that, you know, watching you in those little villages in Colombia and even in the wilderness of Alaska and Canada, you know, just greeting people with a smile, I could see their reaction.
Look, I think smiles are medicine. And going back to not lauding people, you know, in the kindness diaries, I smile a lot. But in life, often people tell me, you need to smile more. And my partner, she once said to me, she said, "Leon, the person who is in the kindness diaries is the real you. And the person who maybe lives his life without that smile is not the real you." And I never forgot that. Right? Because I was always like, well, you know, I'm always in a good place when I do the kindness diaries or I do interviews or do this and that. And she's like, "That's the real you." So it was a beautiful thing.
You are a very lucky man to have a partner like that.
Yes, I am.
So coming to your new movie, The Kindness Within, A Journey to Freedom, and I loved it. I loved it. I have watched it twice, I do confess. And it resonates with me. I traveled through India on a spiritual path with my mother, and we went to Pondicherry to visit the Sri Aurobindo ashram, the Vivekananda ashram, and we even met the godman Sai Baba. The local chief minister took us. He was a huge fan as well. And then, like you, I've been several times with the Brahma Kumaris to their headquarters on Mount Abu. I love spending time in the Gandhi ashram in Ahmedabad, and then, you know, the spiritual depth of Varanasi, although I confess I've never put my head underwater. I think that might be a step too far. So this connection in your movie, you know, and I still think of that little church you're in and at the top of the mountain in the fog, and that profound connection between kindness, optimism, and then what you were experiencing in India, that faith and the spirituality and the hope. So after making the movie and that journey, what is your biggest takeaway from the journey and the movie?
So for those who don't know about the movie, I basically went to India to find God, not the God that lives up in the sky, the God that lives in all of us. And to answer your question about what I learned, I learned that when we connect to source, when we connect to love, when we connect to the universe, to God, whatever you want to call it, it changes every fiber of our existence. And the God men that you were talking about, I think they live in that space. And mere mortals like us have to try and get to that space as much as possible and to live from there. In the movie, I had many moments, many glimpses of that presence of universal love, let's call it God, whatever you want to call it. And the more moments I have of that, the calmer I become. And it's a universal thing that each and every one of us can experience. You don't have to go to India to experience it. You don't have to go to a mountaintop to experience it. It's everywhere. It always will be. It always has been, and it always is. And it's just a question of allowing it to flow through us and to be aware of it. And it took me going to India to find God to realize that I didn't have to go to India to find God, if that makes sense.
Yeah, what I found fascinating about that journey of yours, because you went to the Christian church on top of the mountain, you visited the ashram of the God-man, you went to, for instance, to Dar es Salaam, and just that sort of mixture of faiths, you know, from Islam to Sikh to Christianity to Hinduism. And like you, I always think that our religious rituals are based in at least 100,000 years of tradition. You know, I love, for instance, the Gregorian Mass. And Jan Garbarek, you know, the Danish saxophonist, does this incredible version of the Gregorian Mass, but with a jazz saxophone played into it. You know, the incense of Catholicism and Hinduism and Buddhism, the chanting, the bells. And so I think there's something profoundly calming and centering about those rituals. Did you find that? I mean, you met the people. I still remember you talking to the wife of the minister and her absolute confidence that you would find God in the Bible. And so did you enjoy the rituals and the people both, or was it the people more that in which you found God?
I think it was a bit of both, yeah. You know. And you talk about the minister's wife. For the minister's wife, the answer was in the Bible. And she believed that and felt that with every single ounce of who she was. And it was clear that the Bible was her answer. And I had to respect that. And I do respect that. And she said to me that if I wanted to find God, I would find it in the Bible. And maybe that's true for many, many, many millions of people. For me, although I respect the Bible, it wasn't the answer for me. The answer for me was in service. The answer for me was in people. The answer for me was in nature. The answer for me was in rituals. I don't want to give too much away, but the moment in the Golden Temple, which I'm sure you remember, that magnificent moment wasn't about any religious text, wasn't about anything for me apart from connecting to the people around me, connecting to the service, connecting to the ritual of love. And that was my entry point. That doesn't mean that the minister's wife was wrong. She clearly wasn't. She was right for her. And I realized then and there that the entry point to God cannot be explained. It must be felt. And each person has a different way to feeling that presence that lives in all of us. Does that make any sense?
Oh, it makes absolute sense that you know, you find it in meditation, you find it in prayer, you find it in chanting, you find it in singing. I find it, you know, planting daffodils and roses in my garden. I have a friend, an Anglican bishop, who just keeps a small congregation here near me. And, you know, he has pianists and all sorts of people, you know, and you find God through him. So I'm just thinking, you're back in Los Angeles now. So how do you preserve that connection to God that you were looking for in India, living in Los Angeles and traveling the world as you do?
Having conversations like this, meditating, going into nature, silence. There's a famous Indian mystic called Kabir, and he said something, I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but maybe not. He said, I wanted to meet God, so I sat still for 3 days. Right? So it's everywhere. It's inside every single one of us. It's in the trees. It's in everything. And what a beautiful thing to be able to be aware and conscious of something so magnificent.
Again, I love the title of the film, the Kindness Within, A Journey to Freedom. So many people seek freedom, and then acts of kindness and deep connection with others. There's a question that occurs to me. What role does kindness play in setting people free mentally, emotionally, and spiritually?
So at the beginning, let's call it, we talked about how you can't be kind, truly kind, unless your heart is open. And when your heart is open, everything becomes possible. So when everything becomes possible, you become free, emotionally free, right? Even if it's just for a glimmer of 10 seconds, in that moment of kindness and open-heartedness, you're free. So the aim is to be free for as long as possible. And one of the ways to that freedom is to come from your heart, is to serve, is to love, is to be compassionate. You know, whenever I am not doing those things, I can assure you I am not free.
So, you know, we're living in a time now of unexpected disruption. So I'm old enough to have remembered 1991 and the August coup and the liberation of countries from the Soviet Union and Fukuyama's essay, The End of History, that democracy would take over the world. And someone like me, you know, who's passionate about democracy and freedom, it's confounding to see what's happening in the United States and elsewhere. So in a world that often feels divided, and looking back to both the Kindness Diaries and your new movie, how can the people listening to this bring more kindness into their daily lives, even in small ways, and thus change the world?
So all it takes to change the world is to touch one life. And you can change the world by touching that life in a hateful way, or you can change the world by touching a life in a positive way. You get to choose. So let's assume, hopefully, you choose to change the world in a positive way, right? All you have to do is touch one life. You don't have to, you know, cause massive disruptions, good or bad. You can touch the world by changing one life. So just do it. One moment at a time. One moment at a time. And the more often that you show up with love in your heart, the more opportunities there are to touch people's lives in a positive way. Yeah. And if you have a moment where you've had a bad moment, all right, fine, you've had a bad moment. It's not the end of the world. Make a conscious decision to live your life with as much love as you possibly can. And sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes you just will not be able to. And it happens to me. And then I look back and I'm like, oh, wow. You're the kindness guy. And you just did this or you just said that. And I start being like, okay, well, probably you should not do that again. So I try my best not to. Right. And then it happens again. And I'm like, oh, God, it's happened again. And I keep on going until hopefully one day I will not scold myself, but I will not look back and think, oh, you shouldn't have done that, because I won't have done it in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's like in the movie, there's a Swamiji at the end. He says, peace is a magnet. And love is also a magnet.
Yeah.
And so is kindness, right? So follow that path and magnetize that, as opposed to magnetizing the bad. One of the things that I used to be a news junkie. I'm a recovering news junkie. I reached a point where I was like, look, there's not much I can do. And whenever I turn on the news, it's just horrible and horrific and makes me anxious and upsets me. So I've implemented a no news policy, and it's made me better. It's made me happier. It's made me kinder. Do I know what's going on? Sure, sometimes people tell me, right? But the crazy chaos of the daily news is not being, the poison is not being injected into my system. And I get it that some people are like, look, a lot of bad things are happening now. You can't just give up and not look at the news. I understand that too. But for me personally, it's so toxic that it just takes me down. So I'm of more use to people creating TV shows, creating films that touch their lives than drowning in a swamp of darkness.
Yeah, in fact, it's so interesting. A fellow called Charlie Hogg, who was a spiritual leader in Australia, I was once sharing something that troubled me. And he said, you can meditate as much as you like, Victor, but if you're sitting in a toxic swamp, you will absorb the poison. And of course, I was in politics for 18 years as a parliamentarian. So it wasn't just an addiction to the news. You were always anxious about whether you'd be in the news and whether the news would be good or bad about you. And I love what you say there, Leon, is we make the news ourselves. I ask people every day what makes you optimistic, and I share the profound lessons that people give me. And I say, even if one person reads it, and coming back to your prison example, I ran these classes on optimism in prison and with quite long-term prisoners. And this young man, a one-punch killer, had come to my class. And at the end of the class, I said, why did you come? And he said, well, the guy in the cell next to me came to your last class and he said, go to Victor. He said, because since then he meditates once a day, he keeps a gratitude journal, and he reads one page of my book, to me. And he said, if I came to your class, you'd give me a copy of the book. Well, the sort of man towering over me, I immediately signed a copy and gave it to him. But when I went home and told my mum, she said, my God, if you've made such a difference to one man, you know, in prison, that he now meditates once a day, that he keeps a gratitude journal and kindly reads something to someone else, you've really achieved your mission. And it's exactly as you say, Leon, just one person.
Yes, and in the world of politics and in the world of what's going on out there now, if you have an open heart, you cannot cause damage. You cannot create hate. So the more people with open hearts, the less opportunity there is for those with closed hearts, for whatever reason they have these closed hearts, the less opportunity for them to do damage. And the more people we can wake up, the less power and control those who are asleep can wield to cause sometimes irrevocable damage.
One of the most powerful things we did during COVID was Caroline Ward, who's a spiritual leader in Australia and Chile, started a podcast with me called The Optimist Heart. The Optimist Heart. And, you know, we interviewed composers and people doing stuff for the poor in Chile and all sorts of things. So I'd say the open heart leads to the optimist heart, doesn't it, Leon?
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And I was actually thinking, I have said that kindness and optimism are one, but maybe I'm wrong, because there are many people out there who, I don't want to mention names, who do really bad things. And one could argue that they have optimism too, in their own dark arts. So it's interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that's quite correct. Coming back to what you were saying about magnetism against serendipity, the master class I run for people is called magnetic optimism. So the highest state I say is to be a magnetic optimist with an optimism so tangible and a vision so compelling that people want to reach out and touch you. And I think you manifest that. I think your partner would probably say that to you, that the real Leon is a magnetic optimist. It's an optimism so tangible and a vision so compelling. And I could see that through the movie. I just found that utterly profound. So look, maybe the last couple of questions. You've been very generous with your time. For those listening who want to become more optimistic, as you do in your best moments, what are the tips and the tricks you use for yourself to become more optimistic and retain your optimism?
I look back at history. I look back at people in history and events in history. And I think to myself of all the moments where it looked like it was over for certain people. Let's say, for example, in Britain in 1940, it was over at Dunkirk. The thing that saved the British in Dunkirk was that Hitler stopped the panzer divisions from crushing the remaining forces in Dunkirk. No one really knows why he did that, but he did that. So if you're Winston Churchill in 1940 as Dunkirk is unfolding, if you're not optimistic, you're finished. So history shows us that great people and great moments are saved from darkness. Just keep on going. Just never, 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 never stop. Never. Ever. Again, like I said, if you have to have like a pit stop, that's fine. But never stop. Keep going, keep going, keep going. I don't care what anyone says to you, or you can't do it. Like every single TV show and film that I've done, I've been told the same thing. No one's ever going to buy it. First three seasons of my show, Amazing Adventures of Nobody, no one's going to buy it. Kindness Diaries, no one's going to buy it. The film, The Kindness Within, it's never going to air anywhere. And I would be like, you know what? Maybe you're right, but maybe you're not. And I'm just going to keep going. And they were wrong. Had I stopped, they would have been right. But I'm not going to stop. So sometimes optimism is simply an iron will to keep on going through thick and thin. Never, ever give up.
And the science out of Canada, for instance, that says that pessimists can't innovate, and you're the perfect example. Innovation, invention, Dyson the vacuum cleaner guy, the bagless vacuum cleaner, which almost every household has. He had 5,000 iterations of the bagless vacuum cleaner before he achieved success. So had he given up halfway through, we might never have had those robotic devices and the like from Mr. Dyson. So I like that idea of just keep going, keep going. So lastly, you are a creative. And the other day with the young people, that I was with in the Attorney General's department, I quoted Teddy Kennedy, who said of his brother Robert, in the eulogy and the funeral, he said of his brother, "Some men see things as they are and say why. I dream things that never were and say why not." So what's next for Leon? What are your dreams for the future?
So the movie took a long time to make. And prior to that, I was, on a mission to do as much as I possibly could. As many shows, as many books, as many speeches, as many press articles, etc., etc. And on many levels, that was ego driven. After I started doing the movie, I made a decision. I said to myself, you know what? You are not going to do anything except focus on this movie. You are going to edit the movie. You're going to film the movie. You are going to promote the movie. And then whatever happens, happens. I don't know what I'm going to do, is my point. Whatever will happen, will happen. I'm not going to chase anymore like I used to for years and years, chasing, chasing, chasing. No. In the movie, you'll remember the scene by Shiva when Andiniji says to me, after I've asked her, I've said to her, look, you obviously have what I want. How do I get what you have? And she says four unbelievably powerful words. She says, don't do, just be. And I took that to heart. Don't do, just be. So that's what I'm kind of trying to mirror. Don't do, just be, to embody it. Don't do, just be. All right, let's see if she's right.
We're on such parallel paths, Leon, because I got the same advice last year. Late in the year, they said, don't do optimism, just be the optimism man. And I think that advice is so profound. So look, The Kindness Within, A Journey to Freedom, listeners, is a wonderful film. In Australia, we can see it on Amazon Prime. Globally, I think you can as well. It is well worth the watching. And if you get the opportunity as well to go back to The Kindness Diaries, and if you've got teenagers and the like, this quirky man in a yellow beetle traveling, relying on the kindness of strangers, it's well worth listening. Leon, yeah, as you know, I'm fascinated by you. I have a Google alert whenever you appear in a publication. How can other people best follow your work and your thinking as you continue on this journey, both promoting the film and its meaning and to whatever comes next?
So the best way is through Instagram at The Kindness Guy. And you can also watch the movie on Amazon Prime. And those are the best ways. And I hope that the movie touches your life in a beautiful way. I always wanted to create a transformative documentary. That was my aim. And I hope it transforms lives. Even one life is good enough for me.
Well, it's just the imagery of you in the fog on the mountain.
That's crazy, right?
Sticks with me. Sticks with me. With such genius filming and such a genius, narrative and storytelling. Actually, maybe can I add one more question?
Sure.
When I tell young people, to be superstars of public policy, I say you have to learn to be a storyteller. Now, every time I see you, I think you're getting better and better and better at being a storyteller. So for both the young and the old, what's the secret to that intriguing storytelling of yours? I used a joke this week. I said, you remember the line from Grease, when the character comes and tells the other girls about her date and they sing, tell me more, tell me more, tell me more. Leon, you are a tell-me-more person. What's the secret to good storytelling?
Come from your heart. Create an adventurous narrative and make people curious. Everyone likes that. Who doesn't like that? Who doesn't want to go on an adventure? Who doesn't want to feel like they're in their heart? And who doesn't want to remain curious? All of us.
Well, Leon, I hope we can follow you on your adventures. And as your partner says, follow you as you smile and enchant other people. Thank you for joining us today, Leon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, what an incredible privilege to have that conversation with Leon. As you can guess, I'm a fan. His journey, his message of kindness and optimism, and Leon's deep reflections remind us that optimism is a mindset, it's a daily practice, a way of leading and a force for transformation. Now, if you enjoyed this conversation, I have a challenge for you. How will you spread optimism today? It could be as simple as sharing a kind word, lifting someone up, or asking what's been the best thing in your day. And if you're passionate about leading with optimism, I invite you to join us at the Centre for Optimism. We're a community of optimists, leaders and change makers who believe in action, connection and spreading infectious optimism. Head over to thecentreforoptimism.com, sign up, explore our resources, and be part of something bigger. Subscribe to this podcast, That Optimism Man, wherever you get your podcasts, at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on our website. And if you have ideas for future guests or topics, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or at the Center for Optimism to help build an even bigger movement for optimism. And until next time, keep your head pointed towards the sun, your feet moving forward, and your heart open to kindness. Thanks for tuning in, and remember, the answer to life's most pressing questions is optimism.